Hello and welcome to our podcast here in Lumpkin County, the heart of the North Georgia Mountains. Today we will be talking with students from our community and our beautiful region. We want to give them an opportunity to tell their interesting stories to all of you today. The people in North Georgia truly do have something great to share. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to share this with all of your friends. With all of these stories, we welcome you to listen and enjoy what we have to offer.
Part 2. Walker's feet left the deck as he was catapulted into the air. Flaming debris flew around him and the ocean rushed to impede his fall. A rope snagged his hand, causing his shoulder to strain against its socket. His body hung taut in the air, barely being safe from dropping into the dark sea raging beneath him. Walker's labored breathing hitched when he started rising in the air again, but this time it was remarkably more controlled. He was hoisted onto what remained of the ship deck. Melody and a member of the crew, along with Albert, had managed to save themselves and him from the sea, but the rest of the sailors could not be seen from the smoke and frothing waves. Walker didn't want to know if they were clinging to debris or if they had been invited to a luncheon with the sea. "What was that?" he asked, untangling the rope from his arm. "The consequences of a woman on board," muttered the crew member. Melody turned to glare and her hands clenched into fists. Before she could decide on a more confrontational approach, Walker spoke. "We're not starting that. Please, please, please." He looked between Melody and the sailor. "What's your name, sailor?" "Crankson," he spat. "But you'll call me Rager." Walker bristled. "Names are earned, Cranky. Speaking of, you're missing a sir. The captain may have put you on the ship, but I've seen figureheads with more spine than you," he said. "Sir." "Enough," exclaimed Melody. She rocked back and forth on her feet. "We need to do something before the wrong crowd comes to our rescue." The smoke had drifted away, revealing wrecked planks and broken bodies. Walker watched as a pair of thrashing hands drifted below and never again rose to break the surface. He watched piece after piece of ship and person sink into the unforgiving depths. His vantage point was slowly succumbing to the sea's onslaught. Melody was right. They needed a plan. "Did any jolly boats survive?" asked Walker as he continued to scan around him. "Right there!" exclaimed Crankston. He vigorously shook his finger toward the heap behind Walker. "I see it 10 feet under." "Okay. Stupid question." Walker rubbed his hands together, attempting to generate an idea through friction and luck. "Where's the closest item that we can use to not drown?" "That scrap over there." Crankson gestured to a jagged swath of wood. It would probably pierce the group with a multitude of splinters, but it wasn't on fire and it seemed buoyant enough. Albert seemed to take this as a sign. He left the group to perch on the jagged piece of wood. He screeched the entire time. "Why can't we just stay on the ship?" asked Melody. Her voice quivered. Walker hadn't realized it, but her eyes were roving over the destruction. He watched as they became wider at the sight of each abandoned crew member. "You're the one that said we needed to move," Cranky commented. "Feel free to stay, but I'm not meeting the mermaids because you're scared of the water," he was still glaring. Walker thought that Cranky seemed more appropriate than Rager. He then considered Moody as perhaps the best fit. Walker also hated to agree with Crankson, especially when it was against Melody, but their scrap of deck continued to sink. "It's a short swim," Walker reassured her. "It'll be over before you know it." He offered her a small smile and held out his hand. She shook her head. "You first," Crankson scoffed. He dove into the water with an obnoxious splash and stroked towards the new raft. Walker tried to convince Melody to make the swim at the same time as him, but she was adamant about being the last one. Upon diving into the water, Walker's limbs were struck by the cold. Salt water filled his nose and he struggled to hold his breath. He dodged hard planks and drifting articles of clothing. He shivered, but he didn't know if it could be solely attributed to the freezing environment he was immersed in. Walker finally reached the jagged boards. Crankson grasped Walker's arm and helped to lift him onto the driftwood. Albert watched with disdainful eyes. Walker found himself wishing that one life form capable of speaking hadn't survived the blast. Looking back at Melody, Walker called for her to dive in. Her face was pale and her shaking form trembled on what remained of their original raft. "Come on," he yelled. "It's not that bad. It'll be over before you know it." Melody didn't move. She seemed frozen in place. Rather, it seemed that she was avoiding touching the barest tendrils of water that were pooling close to her feet. Walker prepared to dive into the water again to ensure Melody's safety, but Crankson grabbed his arm. "We heard she volunteered for this trip, with or without you. Why'd she come if she's scared of the water?" Walker didn't have time to prepare an answer. Albert leaped into the air, screeching like a cat without a tail. Walker clasped his hands over his ears and whipped his head in every direction, trying to determine what had startled the parrot. All he saw was an abnormally large pelican with an eye patch. What was with Walker and birds and clothes? Walker wanted to laugh at this point. At the very least, he wanted to laugh at Albert's skittishness. The chuckle died in his throat when the pelican crashed into Albert. Both the birds went careening through the air. Albert scrambled to get away from the pelican, but the larger bird forced Albert to land on a piece of debris. Whenever the parrot tried to take off, the pelican pushed him back down with its pouch-like beak. Walker reeled in confusion. A pelican with an eye patch was bullying a parrot with a magic collar. Walker decided in that instant that he had seen everything. Walker was wrong. An unfamiliar brigantine cut through the waters, heading straight for the wood that was protecting Walker and Crankson from an untimely death. A booming voice rang out from the new vessel. "Pirate, sailor, or potential privateer, have no fear, the scoundrel Archer Vaines is here." Walker looks at Crankson. Crankson stared back. There was not a hint of recognition from either of the two men. "Who's Archer Vaines?" whispered Walker. "It's the captain's job to know the humanoid threats at sea," Crankson snapped. "The crew deals with the ocean itself." Walker rolled his eyes. Melody yelped. Water splashed her ankles, but she still refused to make the swim to the others. Her face contorted in what appeared to be pain when the water hit her exposed skin again. "Melody Prince, ward of the sea, I have arrived to save thee," sang the disembodied voice. The ship had slowed to a halt right next to Melody. A rope ladder was cast from the deck, and Melody scrambled up. "Wait, Melody!" exclaimed Walker. "What are you doing?" "Relax, Walker. You are such a talker. To save the pauper only to leave the prince? Why, it doesn't make sense!" chortled Archer. The ship slowly came within reach of Walker. Melody had disappeared over the ship's edge. Desperate to ensure her safety, Walker clambered up the rope ladder after her. Crankson followed, but he muttered comments that made Walker wish for a bar of soap. Walker crested the ship's side where he was met with an arrow aimed at his throat. A young man, barely old enough to grow stubble, gazed at Walker from behind an ornate bow. Walker eyed every inch of the weapon, from its obsidian arrowhead to the bow that was carved with mermaids fighting with bows against humans with seal hands who were wielding water. "Who are you?" asked Walker. "Friend or foe? I've already told you so," said the man who Walker assumed to be Archer Vaines. Archer squared his feet. "Maybe an arrow or two," he crooned, "might clean out those ears for you." "Rhymes aren't frightening, pipsqueak," interrupted Crankson. He stepped out from behind Walker. He jabbed a finger at Archer. "I bet you couldn't hit a whale if it impaled itself on your arrow." Walker's gaze turned steely. Crankson screamed. An arrow was lodged into the tip of his index finger, causing it to be stuck in the same position he had used to point. Walker hadn't seen Archer aim or release the arrow. However, he did see that another one was already notched, and it was again aimed at Walker. "Control your crew, or it will be something I am forced to do." "He's not my crew. Let the woman and I go, or woman and me go. We'll tell every one of your..." Walker paused. "Rhyming skills? And prowess with the bow?" Melody audibly sighed from behind Archer. "Absolutely no loyalty. How predictable of royalty. Yet the one you wish to save, you'll just as soon bury her in a grave." "You don't know me," Walker snarled. "Weapon or not, you're a boy who doesn't know what he's talking about." "Oh, well, excuse me, but a selkie without her coat will challenge death before she tries to float," said Archer. He glanced at Melody, who had become even palier. "Stop," she cried. "You're better and smarter than us. You don't have to kill us." She shook her head. "What do you even want?" "First, we need the pelican. With him, we can begin." Archer whistled, and the pelican swiftly descended onto Archer's head. Archer didn't flinch or make any move to displace the bird. Albert was trailing the other bird in silence. "Meet Gano, the only attack pelican I know." Gano nuzzled Archer's neck. The marksman responded with an affectionate chuckle. Archer motioned to Albert. "I've never seen the appeal of a parrot. Yes, it can speak, but that often hurts its merit. Leave Albert out of this." Walker surprised himself with his willingness to defend the parrot merely a few moments before he was wishing for its disappearance. "I'll cut to the chase so we can enter a, better headspace. I don't want the treasure, but I want something of equal measure." "Your rhymes are getting sloppy," says Crankson. "But your head is filled with poppy!" Archer clapped his hands together. "Thank you, Crankson. Without you, I'd surely be done." Crankson looked inclined to reply, but Melody interrupted. "What's your demand?" His voice lost all of its melodic quality. "I want the net of Raconum." Archer continued in a monotone. "Your parrot wears a piece of it, but I'll exchange embarrassing simple information in exchange for the bird." "Albert isn't some bargaining chip," said Walker. "Did I mention that you're not in a fantastic position to refuse requests?" Archer still had the bow, and an arrow was still notched. "You think you're so smart?" said Crankson. "Then you'll have no problem beating Walker in a battle of wit," he shrugged. "You have to admit, it looks a lot more honorable than bullying others. If you win, you get the parrot and don't tell us a thing." He swallowed. "If we win, then we get the information and you have to give us your ship. I do think the prince here is inept, so your challenge I will accept." Walker reverted to his original manner of speaking, much to Walker's annoyance. Archer backed away from Walker, giving the allies a chance to speak to one another before the new challenge began. "Why do you suggest wit?" chastised Melody. "Why couldn't you have chosen anything else?" Walker had the good sense to be insulted. "I can do it," he exclaimed. "Wit, riddles, the two are practically the same thing." "Can you hear the beating of your heart?" sang Archer. "I believe it is time to start." "We'll each ask questions too. The winner is the one that answers without the benefit of a clue." "I'll start," declared Walker. He cleared his throat. He knew some pretty good jokes, but his knowledge of riddles were lacking in complexity. "I'm waiting," said Archer. Walker cleared his throat again. You cannot keep me until you have given me. What am I? Archer barely waited for Walker to finish. Your word. My turn. He relaxed his bowstring. It's shorter than all the rest. When you're happy, you raise it like it's the best. Gano still sat on his head. The pelican watched Walker with bright eyes. He knew Gano was laughing at his lack of an answer. Walker couldn't think of anything. He looked around, trying to solve for time. Crankson was glaring with his arms crossed, obviously unimpressed with Walker's skill. Melody was smiling encouragingly and giving him a thumbs up. Walker whipped his head towards Archer. A thumb! He grinned. Correct, said the marksman. Rolling his shoulders, he said, something from you I would never expect. The man who invented it doesn't need it. The man who bought it doesn't want it. The man who needs it doesn't know. What is it? Asked Walker. This riddle had something for ages as a child. He hoped it would prove difficult for Archer. Archer paused. He wiggled his fingers and talked to himself, muttering about cheap questions and pointless brain teasers. Walker thought that he had won, when suddenly, Archer exclaimed, A coffin! The living buys for the dead. The dead doesn't care, and the coffin maker merely offers his craft to the world. Archer laughed. That was a good one. I hope you'll find such a challenge in mine. The marksman released a breath. My final one. Answer correctly, and I'll consider myself done. His voice became flat again. What works even after it breaks? Walker scratched his head. He didn't know. Every time he broke something, it stopped working. That was the point of it being broken. He looked to Melody again, but she shrugged when their eyes met. He opened his mouth to admit defeat, but a new figure had arrived on the deck. A heart, said the captain. Walker gaped. He hadn't seen another ship anywhere. The captain strode over to Archer. His boots created a resonant clack at every step. Now I have a question for you, Mr. Vaines. What is the treasure of Racona? Your errand boy won nothing, said Archer. He stuck his nose in the air. I don't have to tell you a thing. The captain's face darkened. You're quick with the bow, he drawled, but even the best archer can't hit dozens of targets at once. A thundering cloud of feathers appeared on the horizon. The flock of parrots from Walker's home were converging on Archer's ship. They would be there within seconds. I'd provide an answer if I were you. My birds will make quick work of your feathered friend, the captain laughed. Actually, I think they'll make quick work of you as well. Archer said nothing, even as swaths of blue, red, orange, and green feathers surrounded him. He didn't flinch when birds landed on his shoulders, his feet, or his bow. When two parrots, along with Albert, pushed Gano from his safe perch on Archer's head, the marksman cried out, Enough! He snapped. Call off your beasties, and I'll not only tell you what the treasure is, but where to find it. The captain held up a hand and traced a small circle in the air. The birds in Archer's immediate vicinity instantly backed away, creating a perfect circle around him. A disgruntled Gano huffed indignantly before reclaiming his perch on Archer's head. The captain motioned for Archer to speak. I do have Raconum's treasure, but it will not bring you pleasure, said Archer, shaking his bow. But if you would let me have the net, you could be saved yet. Riddles make my parent antsy, said the captain. I suggest a more forthcoming answer. He traced a small circle, and the bow's birds closed in on Archer again. He had inches of clearance between their beaks and his feet, and Walker felt suffocated looking at the scene. Archer continued. The prize will bring your demise. Do you notice how you shake as soon as you wake? Can you hear the blissful wind of the sea, or do you hear a screeching banshee? The more Archer spoke, the more the captain's features lifted into a scowl and then a sneer. The captain traced an even smaller circle, and parrots began to climb Archer. Walker watched their talons pierce Archer's pants and shirt. The young man didn't make a sound as red spots began to bloom on his clothes. The parrots stopped at his neck. If Archer lowered his head an inch, then their beaks would scratch his jaw. The neck and the treasure are not meant to be used, in the hands of humans they can only abuse. Archer's voice was higher now, urgent. Raconum wished to prevent the destruction of his wards, something you are working towards. If you continue to use the net, Raconum's curse will settle its debt. Walker hadn't seen the captain move, but the parrots were crawling up Archer's face, covering his mouth and distorting his words. One more chance, Mr. Vaines, or I'll find the treasure myself. Walker thought the archer wouldn't break. The young man stared at Renshaw King, the captain, in the eye longer than Walker had ever dared to. Right before a parrot's claw found a resting spot in his eye, Archer flung his bow towards the captain. The bird stopped. The treasure is the bow, but to use it will earn you a prize spot below. The sea is old, but she has been known to care. The fiery depths are eternal, and they are cruelly fair. The captain snapped his fingers, and his army of birds launched into the sky in a storm of feathers. Walker, Melody, Crankson. Please relieve Mr. Vans of a viable means of flotation. We won't be needing him anymore. Melody balked. You mean to throw him overboard? You said no one would get hurt. Now that would be nice, said the captain. He tugged on the collar of his shirt, revealing a sealskin coat beneath. When she saw the article of clothing, Melody's face blanched. Like a marionette doll, she jerked towards Archer, grabbing hold of him and attempting to drag him over the rails of the ship. Crankson moved to help her, but Walker sprinted to stop him. Wait, he said. Melody, what did you mean? No one had to get hurt. Now's not the time, she said. Archer was struggling to fight against her hold on him, and he was nearing the edge of the brigantine. Now is certainly the time, exclaimed Archer. Figure it out before I can no longer rhyme. Walker reeled around. Captain, what is your plan for the treasure? Walker, Prince, you should know the desire of a captain who shares the namesake of kings. The captain smiled, displaying rotting teeth. Power. The net and the treasure combined to grant dominion over beasts with a mind, yelled Archer. He managed to duck under Melody's arms and sprinted to Walker. Including humans, the control that Raconum wielded over the original parrots can be amplified by the treasure. Man's greatest desire is to be unconquerable. Raconum's sons didn't die trying to find the treasure in the first place. They died trying to destroy it before their father found out. He wanted to use it to forever save his creatures. How's a fairy tale going to save your life? Asked Crankston, who pushed past Walker to grab Archer again. Because when Raconum killed one of his sons, to claim the treasure for himself, his other son killed him. The act of familicide created a curse from the souls of the murdered, which resulted in the creation of the first Selkies. The treasure and Annette were lost in the fight, so the Selkies were tasked with finding and destroying the items. The seal people? Asked Walker. I don't understand where this is going. The captain stepped onto the ship railing and took a step into empty air. Walker's heart plummeted. He expected the captain to fall to an unexpected death. Instead, he rose on a litter of feathers. A group of parrots had circled back and were acting as a flying raft for the captain to stand on. You should have listened to me, Walker. Now, you're against me. He snapped his fingers. Melody, come on. Let's leave these fools. Walker's voice broke. Melody? Walker, I promise I can explain. I am so incredibly sorry. Melody reached out to take the captain's outstretched hand, but Guano soared it with the speed unknown to pelicans and with the grace of a cannonball rammed into the captain, rendering him unbalanced. The captain wavered like a sailor who visited one too many taverns before toppling from his parrot getaway service. His high-pitched scream would have been comical if Melody hadn't released a guttural sob. Good job, Gano, shouted Archer. Now retrieve! The pelican dove towards the water in the same spot where the captain had fallen. Walker rushed to Melody. You have to tell me what's going on, he looked into her eyes. Please. Melody sniffled. I thought you were supposed to be clever, said Archer. I mean, it's obvious. She's a Selkie. Why do you think she was so eager to go on this voyage? Granted, it seems like it has been hysterically executed, but she did find the treasure first. Melody? Is this true? Whispered Walker. She nodded. Wait, what's the curse you mentioned? Walker heard confused parrot squawks and angry pelican noises surrounded by splashing, but he kept his attention focused on Archer and Melody. Crankson slid away from the trio as if he was actively trying to not appear connected to one party more than another. The curse is that the human that wields both items will be able to control every living thing, but will lose touch with the living world. The poor soul will slowly deteriorate into a husk of a person with only one item. With both, the change is rapid and irreversible. Archer emphasized every word, pitching his voice to make up for his lack of rhyme. That still doesn't explain why you, Walker pointed to Melody, were so willing to work with the captain. He has my coat, said Melody. I have no choice. Without it, I'll never be able to touch the sea again. Her gaze turned longing towards the open stretch of ocean. She sighed, and Walker could see the ache inside her. I didn't know, he said. She looked back at him. You were never supposed to find out. Wait, Archer, you said that using even one of the items would seriously harm its wielder. How are you okay? Honestly, that was my first time using the bow. Gone through my regular one overboard moments before I arrived at your wreck. I grabbed the mystical one and ended up shooting the grouchy one over there. I guess I'm lucky. Walker marveled at the coincidence that led to everything piecing together so quickly. The 1,000-page epics he had read as a kid must have featured previously unheard of unlucky characters. Beaking up from his spot of solitude, Crankson said, If you don't have Raconum's net, then how did you get that pelican to behave? I cured him of explosive diarrhea when he was a mere chick. He's been loyal ever since. Speaking of, Guano soared over Walker's head and crashed into the deck. He was tangled up in fabric, a sealskin coat. The pelican with the eye patch had wrangled to cut away from the most formidable captain in the seven seas. Melody started crying again, but this time the tears were accompanied by smiles and words of thanks. Before Walker could attempt to celebrate with his wife, a sodden hand clamped down on the side of the railing. The captain hauled himself onto the deck and managed to stand with a remarkable amount of swagger. In one hand, he clutched Archer's bow, and around his neck, an orange knotted necklace rested similar to the ones worn by all his parrots. You think that just because you knock me into the sea, you win? I was born to rule, the captain declared, raising the bow, grasping the necklace. The ground swayed under Walker's feet and swirling orange spots appeared in his vision. He found himself waiting, but he didn't know why. Walker's mind felt like it was filled with stuffing. With great difficulty, he turned his head towards Melody, then Crankson, then Archer. Their eyes were glassy and their feet were planted firmly in the ground. The captain laughed. He was using the power of the net and the treasure. Now that you have learned some manners, I hope you listen very carefully. He rubbed his hands together. Crankson? Walk the plank. No hard feelings, but I've never liked you. And Rager? It's a terrible name. Walker watched Crankson go rigid and walk to the edge of the ship. He was powerless to stop the man from stepping onto the ledge and falling off. He didn't hear a sound except for a small splash that the ocean immediately drowned out. Warning bells went off inside Walker's head. Bells shouldn't go off in a head, he thought. He remembered a burning ship and the adrenaline of when he fell to meet the sea. Walker wiggled his fingers. He could do that. He shifted his feet. They moved. Archer, you annoy me, so go ahead and... The captain never finished his sentence. He started seizing. His pupils dilated to fill his entire eye and spittle flew from his mouth. Walker suddenly felt ill. He managed to glance at Melody and Archer. They were shaking and their mouths frothed. Someone had to stop this. Walker shuffled forward one step, then another. He broke into a staggering run, bolting towards the captain. Walker punched the captain in the jaw. The man hunched further and slumped to the ground. The bow fell out of his hand and Walker kicked it away. He could think again. Melody and Archer rushed to him. Are you okay? Asked Melody. She reached for his hands and Walker squeezed hers reassuringly. I feel like a changed man. I doubt I could break free from whatever torture he caused, but, and not to sound cliche, I feel like I just overcame my fears like a salmon surging upriver. Walker felt great. He even felt inspired to create word poetry. The captain had always ordered Walker around, but Walker had delivered the final blow, literally. If I had known brainwashing would make you moderately self-aware, then I would have suggested it earlier, said Archer. What do we do with him? Asked Melody, nudging the captain with her foot. Throw him overboard, suggested Walker. Maroon him on an island and never look back, proposed Archer. Look at him, he can't do anything, said Melody. It was true. The captain was still unconscious. His skin was papery and his dark veins created a stark contrast. The trio was saved from making a decision when the flock of parrots descended on the ship. Albert led the birds. Ours? He squawked. Ours, 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 repeated every bird. Guano let out a raspy breath in agreement. I'm not arguing with Guano. Let the parrots have him, said Archer. Walker and Melody backed away from the captain, but not before Melody removed the necklace, the Nanoraconum, from him. The parrots lifted the captain's body off the ground and carried him away. Walker didn't bother watching Albert, Guapo, and the others drift into the sunset. He had had enough of birds. Will Guano come back? Asked Melody. Archer smiled sadly. I hope so. Walker picked up the bow. We have to destroy them, the net and the bow. I've spent my entire life learning how to, said Melody. It's actually pretty simple. All it takes is the tear of the sea, the blood of a king, and the song of the wind. Granted, I don't understand how we find those, but we've come this far. I have an idea, exclaimed Walker. It'd probably be easier to execute if we were on dry land, though. Then let's go home, said Melody. Home? Not to invite myself over, but those birds destroyed my supplies, and I want to see the items destroyed, too. Archer clasped his hands together in a begging gesture. Walker laughed. Set the course. I have a feeling we're almost done with this voyage. Archer swooped and ran to adjust the sails. It seems easy, doesn't it? Questioned Melody. Please don't say that. I can't handle a jinx. Said Walker. Maybe our story lies in what truly happened instead of fables of forgotten kings and disruptive parrots. Melody hummed in agreement. The pair listened to the water hit the sides of the boat as they cut through the waves. They were convinced that the most difficult part of their journey was behind them.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Jade and Gerald's The Story of the Seven Seas. Please stay tuned for the finale of this adventure next week. You can find more episodes of the Principles Podcast on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Music, and iHeartRadio.